This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, an organization devoted to producing and distributing Reformed theological content for a connected age, online at reformedforum.org. This is the Reformed Media Review, episode number 46. Today on the program, we discuss Merrill Westfall's Whose Community, Which Interpretation? Philosophical Hermeneutics for the Church. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. This is episode number 46, and my name is Camden Busey. We have a great episode lined up for you, a very engaging one. We're going to be talking about postmodern hermeneutics. And as a launching pad, we're going to be speaking with Nathan Shannon about his recent review article in the Westminster Theological Journal. So welcome to the program, Nathan. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Camden. Thank you. I'll try to be engaging.
Yes. Well, I'm sure you will. You're always engaging.
That's sweet. Thank you.
Well, Nathan has a wonderful article, as I've mentioned, on a book by Merrill Westfall entitled Whose Community, Which Interpretation? Philosophical Hermeneutics for the Church. For those of you who have access to the Westminster Theological Journal, either because you subscribe or because your library subscribes or you have an access to an online database that catalogs these journals, it is the Westminster Theological Journal from fall 2010, volume 72, number 2. And Nathan's article appears in that issue. So it's a great brief, I think 8 pages or so, or no, maybe 16 pages in the journal.
But yeah, it's not too long. It's not too long.
But it's a really good introduction to Merrill Westfall's book, and we want to speak about that today. So, Nathan, maybe you could provide just a really quick survey of the landscape of philosophical hermeneutics or postmodern hermeneutics, and what is Westfall's project here in this book?
Well, Westfall's project is he begins the book by laying out the landscape. He lays out two sort of poles that he wants to avoid, and one is a kind of obsessive pedantic realism or sort of perfectionism of the text, and he's worried about he's worried about people being too confident in their own interpretations, or he's worried about people feeling crushed under the obligation to find the singular objective truth which a text is trying to give us. And on the other hand, he wants to avoid what he calls anything goes relativism. A lot of people like to think or say that postmodern interpretation leaves us in that situation of anything goes relativism. This argument is made often, and Westfall says a number of times in the text that even the most famous, names in postmodern interpretation are not of people who would defend anything goes relativism. He thinks that there really is no such thing. But point is, he wants to...
He asks, show me one. I haven't found any philosophers that actually do this.
Right.
That's what he argues.
And we'll probably mention this later, but he even attributes the sort of fairy tale, the folklore of the anything goes hermeneutics, to the objectivist. So it's sort of as though there's the objectivist interpretation we have to avoid, and it's that objectivist person who has invented sort of as propaganda the story of anything goes hermeneutics, in order to protect himself from having to admit his own subjectivity, or to have to be more sophisticated hermeneutically or something like that. So it. I don't totally buy into the scheme he gives us, but you can sort of sympathize with the idea of trying to go between a hard objectivism and the idea that we can read a text and say it means just about anything, and we can all sympathize with this lay of the land. We don't want to do either of those things with the text of the Bible, which is ultimately what he wants to talk about.
He speaks about hermeneutic sophistication, and he wants to actually be realistic, not in a philosophical realistic sense, but he just wants to say, look, this is how things are. I mean, we don't go about doing hermeneutics on other books, or we realize that we can't necessarily come to a text and say with 100% certainty this is exactly what it means, or at least that's what he's questioning. And he also wants to say that there actually is a meaning here, that I can't just make something up and decide that I've got my own interpretation and then that's correct. Somebody right. writes me a letter, or if right. the IRS writes me a notice saying I owe them so much money, I can't just throw, right. you know, decide that I think that means that, you know, I won the lottery.
Right.
You know?
Whatever you want. Right.
So that's right. he's on the surface doing something that seems to be very attractive. So we'll get into that.
I think so. Yeah. I definitely think so. And we will get into that because there are implications for, you know, the fact that he asks, he proposes an important problem, an important question, means that we should have answers,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. So one of the specters that Westfall deals with that you mentioned in your review is this idea of naive realism. Is that have we already mentioned that, or what? How would you define a naive realism, and how does Westfall seek to approach it?
Well, what Westfall is concerned to avoid is either the kind of interpretation or the kind of person. Frankly, there's a lot of at least the flavor of ad hominem throughout the text. So he does a lot of psychologizing himself,
yeah.
actually. when he talks about objectivism and interpretation, he wants to attribute that to some kind of fear of postmodernism or fear of, you know, a person is going to say that there is only one interpretation because they're afraid that they might be wrong or not have an answer for something or something like that. So he wants to put, he wants to show that two things, that naive realism is both philosophically problematic, that we don't want to head down the direction that there can be only one interpretation of a text. But that it's also sort of socially dangerous,
uh-huh.
That it's divisive, and that ultimately we should be worried about it from an ethical point of view.
Okay. So no naive realism because it's wrong.
That's right, because it's wrong. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. But the question then being, since all people in the church necessarily should read their Bible, it's a part of corporate worship, it should be a private or a part of private worship as well. If a naive realism or the simplistic type view of Scripture is wrong or unethical, does that entail that every single person who ever approaches the text of Scripture should have a sophisticated hermeneutic? Is that part of Westfall's argument?
It is part of his argument, I think. In his book, he kind of, I think he sort of preaches the gospel of the postmodern, interpretation. He wants to, mm-hmm. Free, you know, the average churchgoer, the one who is, who lives under the cloud of the singular objectivist interpretation of the text. And, he wants to free that person by showing them, that the text is alive, that you too can interpret the text when you read it, that the text speaks to you, that we can interpret it together, that there can be a lively and diverse interpretive life in the church, and that we don't have to fall in line and sort of and march behind, you know, the singular interpretation that must be right. It's a much more friendly interpretive environment. It's a much freer one, a much more diverse one. And he does. You asked if he wants to say every churchgoer or every Christian or every Bible reader has the obligation, and I would like to think he would probably say not the obligation, but the opportunity.
Oh, interesting.
In other words, this is good news.
Yeah.
That we don't have to live under the, and he uses such words, the tyranny of the objectivist interpretation or interpreter even, because, you know, he's also worried about that objectivist interpretation being wielded by a person against other people. So he's worried about interpersonal.
In an oppressive sense.
And I don't think you would disagree with that. The language in the text, not surprisingly, betrays a concern for, I think he says, interpretive terrorism at one point, or tyranny.
Interpretive tyranny of the
author, or something like that. Mm-hmm. so we don't bear the obligation, but it's an opportunity for us to be freed from that kind of oppressive, you know, enslavement to a singular interpretive scheme. You know,
I see. Or something like that. Another thing you deal with in your review is the third part of his book, the third chapter, which deals with Nicholas Walterstorff's idea of authorial intent. How have people who've studied hermeneutics or try to formulate or fashion hermeneutics typically understood authorial intent? What are the different positions that people have? And then specifically, what is Walterstorff's idea or role of authorial intent?
Well, I'm no expert on the topic, but Walterstorff, in Divine Discourse, he uses, he refers to speech act theory, Austin's speech act theory. And so authorial intent can be divided in various ways. You know, you have the actual utterance, and you have the action intended by the utterance, and then you have the effect. And Walterstorff, he uses authorial intent in this way. He says that he wants to ask two questions. The first question is, what did the human author mean by using this language in this way? But secondarily, since it's the Bible, what does the divine author, what did he mean or what does he mean currently by using this human text in this way? So he wants to talk about the action, the second category in Austin's speech act theory. He wants to talk about that because we know that the Bible doesn't change, right? It's a fixed collection of human sentences and human language structures. So the biblical hermeneutical question is going to be, what is God's illocutionary action in using this human language, this piece of human speech? What was it, and what is it now to me? That's what Walterstorff wants to do. So the authorial intent sort of has two levels, I guess. And Westfall believes that Walterstorff is still still hides a kind of unhealthy appetite for objectivism.
Mm-hmm.
And Walterstorff expands on this critique when he discusses Hirsch, and he says that Hirsch was open about his desire to find an objective, something safe where we can really drop anchor, and we can say, okay, we're going to find an objective meaning. We have to stay away from this idea that there's no meaning or no discernible meaning or no discernibility. We have to be able to say that the text means something. So Hirsch wanted to come up with a method, a method that could do that, a hermeneutical method. And Westfall says that his method is hangs on to authorial intent.
Uh-huh.
So he recalls Walterstorff a little bit, and he says that he critiques this position, saying that using what he calls a Gadamerian ontology of the thing, which is a lot of syllables to say that authorial intent only meets us halfway.
Interesting.
So when we read a text, we're going to meet in the middle, and we can't pretend that the authorial intent is all that the text is.
Yeah, this brings up the point of whenever we absolutize one of these portions of a hermeneutic, either the authorial intent or the reader's response, or whenever we absolutize one of them, we can end up with major problems. Authorial intent cannot be king of all things, because I can't just write a note to somebody telling them, something terrible, and then they come back to me upset, and I pretend like, well, that's not what I meant.
Right.
You know, I meant that I love you dearly when I told them that I hate them. You know, it,
right?
You just, it's obviously, can't play that game. Yeah, there are rules of language. There, under you know, the language doesn't operate that way. I cannot just decide. Or if I go into a public facility and I yell that there's a fire, you know, I could be arrested for that. I'm called to account, and I can't pretend that. Well, I don't use fire in that way when I'm in a public place. You
right,
know, the,
right.
No.
Yeah.
That's so authorial intent, just as a very basic examples to demonstrate that authorial intent cannot be the sole element in coming to understand what a text means. But the reverse is also a problem, the reader's response. If that's the only thing, then a person reading can make the text mean whatever they want. So Westfall's trying to deal with this. I like that idea of trying to meet halfway. I'm not convinced that maybe that's the best way to do it, but at least the things he's trying to address in his system are the right questions to try to answer, I think.
I think so. He asks a lot of helpful questions, and I like the fact that you pointed out that, you know, that these things are of value, but the danger is absolutizing one or the other. In other words, we need authorial intent.
Yeah.
Of course.
I know.
You know, it seems like, you know, someone, you know, like Chesterton said he discovered England, you know. Authorial intent is the way we read a book. It just is. But we know, of course, also, you know, that we bring things to the text, that we learn unique things. And that's why we have Bible studies. We get together to discuss things with other people. And it's just so, you know, it's like pointing out to someone that they're actually standing on the ground. And say, yeah, I know that, but you don't think about it all the time. But, just in general, broadly speaking, when you read a text like this, it gets deep into interpretive questions. Almost any sort of philosophical topic in that sense of dealing with basic and critical issues, the tendency that you want to watch out for, whether it's philosophical or theological literature, is exactly, I think, what you said, absolutizing something. Mm. I mean, postmodernism is intoxicated with subjectivity and the limitedness of the human person, the historicity of the author. I mean, there's a lexicon, you know, they've invented an entire lexicon of vocabulary to discuss the historicity, the situationality, all of this stuff, you know, but it's all things that are just taken for granted, you know, but they've made a science of it, and it's very seductive. But these are all things we need to understand and need to have. But once you absolutize them, then you've compromised. You've compromised yourself, and you've compromised, you know, the discipline itself, interpretation, truth. You know, so it's something we need, most certainly. I mean, and I think postmodernism, in its sort of obsession with subjectivity and historicity and the finiteness of the human mind and our insufficiency as individual interpreters. All of those things are resoundingly true, but you know what's funny? Scripture is much more severe on the insufficiency of the human mind and the human person as far as a legislator of truth and all those things. So in a sense, even on their best day, the postmoderns are in little league, you know, as far as those questions. So they're good. They're sort of true as far as they go, but they're absolutized and not put in a position so that they're understood rightly, which is before God. Why is man unable to be the legislator of truth? Why is, you know, all those questions? Not because we're all hateful or just because we're materialistic or because, yes, maybe, you know, all those things a little bit, you know, sort of. But ultimately because of sin. Ultimately because of, you know, a covenantal situation before God. So this is already, you know, we skipped to the climax already, but...
Well, it's fine. We can come back. I do want to come back to the ontology of the thing, but before we do that, since we're on the topic, many postmodern people who are attempting hermeneutics will recognize that they can't absolutize, authorial intent or the reader's response, or they want to avoid a full-blown relativism. But to do this, they replace these things, or they try to supplement or put the weight or authority within the community. And there are different ways to do this, different levels of community and or a web or a network of readers, and they check themselves against each other. You mentioned the idea of Bible studies, etc. But how does that actually function? You've alluded to this in your scriptural response, but how should a community be properly used, and how is a community often, unfortunately, misused in the postmodern scheme?
Yeah, that's a good point. Westfall refers to community, and I think it's a popular topic in many circles. And as you say, I think Westfall and others refer to the idea of community in order to temper the dangers of individualistic relativism. So we don't want to say that every person can interpret the text and come up with whatever meaning he wants. So the interpretive activity should be communally sort of tempered in that sense. I interpret a text to mean something. Another person interprets it to mean something else, and then we have a third person who comes in and has their own interpretation.
Uh-huh.
And what Westfall proposes,
or like these the men with the elephants, he brings up that example.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The men blind men and the elephant, yeah. And yeah, yeah, the blind elephants and the man. No, and then so you know, and we come together with
it
our
says,
various.
Where's the peanuts?
Yeah. Poor guy. Yeah. You know, different parties come together with various interpretations. And what Westfall seems to propose is a procedure in which those interpretations are brought together and what we hold in common, we should, sort of because of ethical concerns, emphasize that or give that sort of interpretive weight, you know. So if we all agree, if I come and say the text means ABC and somebody else says it means CDE and somebody else says it means C, you know, GHI or whatever. At least we agree on C. So let's agree on C. Have church talk about C, teach C, think about C together, and you guys keep your individual contributions. Uh-huh. They're welcome, I would say, but uh-huh, they have to be sort of. But interpretive priority goes to what we have in common.
Uh-huh.
And that's the function of community. It's interesting because the function of community, the value of community, togetherness and being together, takes a weird sort of priority over truth and over the interpretation, which is, you know, we used to assume is supposed to give us truth. But in this way of looking at it, if you prioritize community above interpretation, what happens is truth is sort of sacrificed, to use really dramatic language, too dramatic, to sacrifice truth at the altar of community in the sense that no matter how good you think your interpretation is, it's not, we shouldn't call it true if it compromises the harmony within the community. It sounds like very Confucian to me. It has sort of a relational weight to it.
Uh-huh.
That forces the interpretive discipline into relative irrelevance.
Huh.
What we're really doing is we're really just trying to bolster the community itself and sort of relational harmony. Mm. That's, I think, I'm not sure he would put it in these words, but I really think the way he's left the activity of interpreting the Bible is that its final cause, its final end, its goal, and its really internal purpose, its teleology, is to bolster community.
Mm.
And then you'd have to talk about, well, is that a Christian value? Of course community is a Christian value. Well, then what's wrong with that? Should truth really be undercut in this way by the idea of community? So then you end up with, should we teach good doctrine or should we strive for church unity?
Mm-hmm.
Those things have to be balanced within the church, you know, in the right way. And I think that Westfall's text gives us the wrong way of doing that.
Maybe we, for the sake of time, should come back to our ontology of the thing in a future episode. That actually might be an interesting thing to discuss in Philosophy for Theologians. So maybe we could thing for there, because we've got another interview coming up in a few minutes. So we need to wrap things up. But before we do that, how does a Reformed doctrine of Scripture address some of the issues that Westfall has? Not only a Reformed doctrine of Scripture, but also a Reformed anthropology. How do these things come to bear upon some of the issues that Westfall is bringing up?
Yeah, such an important thing to conclude with, I think. You know, we can poke holes in the logic all day long, and we do nothing productive until we mine the riches of Reformed mm-hmm. theology. So many things to say. I want to say that that the Reformed doctrine of Scripture, especially, and I mentioned in the piece in the journal that the perspicuity of Scripture is such an important interpretive tool. You know, I understood it and appreciated it much less until I started to think about all that postmodernism says about the limitedness and the situatedness of the human reader. And then, the idea that Scripture interprets itself uh-huh. and that Scripture should be interpreted through Scripture is such a beautiful and glorious deliverance from this morass. That means that it is an invitation and a welcome to work hard at interpreting Scripture using Scripture itself. So, you know, I admit that I'm a subjective person, that I'm going to be wrong, but I recline in my interpretive busyness on the singular authorship of God. There is one mind behind all the diversity mm-hmm. of Scripture.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a fear that sort of lurks behind all of this. Even Westfall doesn't want to say we can get any interpretation from the text. Well, why doesn't he want that? He wants to avoid that. I don't think he manages to avoid it. He just says that it's a boogeyman. He uses the word. It's just an interpretive boogeyman.
Yeah.
Well, but what's wrong with that? Why are we afraid of that? And I think that there's this weird sort of fear of the idea that there isn't anything such as truth anywhere. And I don't think the postmodern interpreter has an answer for, is there truth somewhere? Which is why, so much of the interpretive language talks about the death of the author and the death of the absolute author. You know, this is, who is that? It's not Foucault, but.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
but it's in there. It's in much of the literature.
But the idea is that I'd like to add. You know, we have the perspicuity of the Scripture, which is anchored in the singular authorship and the singular mind of the omniscient God, who uses human language because He invented it. He's not contained, restricted. He's not, he's not uncomfortable or cramped in the context of a human text. He uses it and gives us sovereignly the truth that He wants us to have. But at the same time, all of truth in a global, cosmic, created context is God's truth, So what's wrong with the idea of reading the Bible and everybody getting their interpretation? How do we, what's wrong with that is that we have a theory of what is true,
mm-hmm.
that there is such a thing as truth. It may be, an infinite sort of mystery of the mind of God, right? We can't plumb the depths of it and know the whole thing. The postmoderns is always going to respond and say, well, you can't know everything. God is mysterious. Yes, I confess that. Of course I confess that ultimately God is mysterious. But the point is that we know that there are things which are true and not true, I teach a class, and I heard recently an undergraduate student was sharing with me about her class studying Shakespeare. They were studying Othello, and she told me that
the game.
One of the themes, and she told me that one of the things their teacher talked about while discussing Othello, Shakespeare's yeah. Othello, was our tendency to think in binaries. You see that how Othello, you know, because he was dark skinned.
This is Derrida here.
And because he was dark skinned, he was respected, but he was but not respected, you know. So it's like we tend to see in black and white and these kind of, and I asked her, is that true that we think in binaries? Oh yeah, that's true. So it's not false. it's just an absurdity, you know, to do these kinds of things, you know, reading texts and things, but anyway, the perspicuity of Scripture gives us the security that that Scripture has an author, and that we can interpret it, and that there may be many true meanings, but there are things that we cannot say Scripture teaches, because we have a God who governs truth. Mm. You know, postmodernism doesn't have that God. You know. And human subjectivity too. Of course, you know, I try to mention that in my article a little bit too. We want to, there's some grain of truth in the postmodern obsession with subjectivity, and that grain of truth is a pale reflection of the biblical doctrine of sin. You know, absolutely, there's a problem between us and the truth which Scripture gives. But that problem is not the fact that we're finite, or that we're stuck in our community, or that we're stuck in modern Western thought, or that any of those things. That problem is the condition of the heart and the condition of the mind of fallen man, sinful, as a rebel of God, you know, against God, devoted in all of his activities to suppressing the truth.
Right.
And you that's... know? It's a much grander depravity than the postmodern, you know, situatedness of the interpreter.
Yeah. So as Reformed interpreters, we should come with a solid understanding of theological anthropology, of our doctrine of God, or our doctrine of revelation, and also maybe haven't emphasized enough our pneumatology, our understanding of the Spirit and the Spirit's role in not only inspiring the text but in guaranteeing that it comes to his church, to the Lord's church appropriately.
Yeah.
And guarding and maintaining the church through its interpretation through the ages. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for stopping by. This has been a great talk, and hopefully we can get into some more of these issues, maybe in a philosophical setting. So thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Let me mention, of course, that this article, again, is available in the Westminster Theological Journal, Fall 2010, Volume 72, Number 2. By Nathan Shannon, who is a PhD student at the Free University of Amsterdam. We are Reformed Forum, and we are available at reformedforum.org. And there you'll find information about all of our programs, not only Reformed Media Review, but also Christ the Center, Philosophy for Theologians. Everything that we're doing is available online. And you can stay tuned and keep track of all of our events at reformedforum.tv/calendar. And keep updated as to when we are going to be broadcasting live so that you can follow along. We want to thank everybody for listening. And if Jeff Waddington were here, he would say, Tola Lege, that is pick up and read.